Okay, let's start with a word of prayer. Our dear Heavenly Father, we just thank you for your tremendous love for us. We thank you for the beauty of your creation and how intricate and complex it is. And we just thank you for it. We ask that you bless us here now as we talk about microgreens, that you give us wisdom and understanding, and that you give us wisdom to understand microgreens. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Okay, my name's Jim, and this is my wife, Lucia. Our last name is Tiffany. We live up quite a ways north in Michigan, and we're delighted to be here today, and we're gonna get started, and I'll let Lucia take over here.
Okay. Please excuse my voice. I'm just getting over a case of laryngitis. So I hope everybody in the back can hear me. Can everybody hear me? Okay, well, I'll do my best. I'd like to hear from maybe three or four of you, just really quick, one sentence. What are you hoping to get out of our seminar this afternoon? That'll help me to know what direction to go and some of the stuff we're going to share with you. Yes.
An income.
You want to get an income. Okay, who else?
How to grow
and where to get supplies, okay?
Nutritional value.
Okay?
How to grow
them
with their mouth. I don't
want to think about. Okay, great. Okay, that sounds like really good. Take two more.
I heard they grow the wigs, so how long?
Okay. And in the back?
Learn how to grow.
Want to learn to grow to earn some money. Okay, so lots of really good ones. One more
comment.
Okay, avoiding pathogens in your microgreens. All right, sounds like some really great questions. where you want to tell you just a little bit about kind of how we got started in microgreens. We started back in 2012. My mother-in-law was living with us, and I was quite occupied with elder care. And that required a lot of flex in my schedule, and it required me to be home most of the time. So we were looking for something that we could do that would help us bring in a little bit of an income stream, because my husband works for himself, works out of our home, and we found that sometimes when you work for yourself, as lots of you know, income is not stable. You know, sometimes it's really good, and then sometimes it might not be so good. So we thought if we had a little bit something extra, that would be helpful. And we also wanted to be able to have it interact with some sort of ministry, and not just be an income production occupation. So we went to camp meeting that summer, and the Byron Smith family was there and did a seminar on agriculture. And we found it really interesting. And up to that point in my life, I had never heard of microgreens. Now, some of you may have heard of them for many years, but I had not. And so we found that really interesting. And so we looked into that, and we decided that maybe that was something realistic for us to get started with. We started in our home. We were there for 3.5 years or so, and then we relocated about a year ago. So this last year has been a year of transition for us, and we bought a different piece of property, and we had to do some remodeling to provide a place for our microgreens. We had been growing them in a garage in our first house. There was a garage in the location we purchased, but it was not insulated, and we live in northern Michigan, so we had to do quite a bit of work to get the space ready for our microgreens. So we spent about 7 months of this last year with the microgreens occupying our master bedroom, and we slept in the guest bedroom or in the living room most of that time. So that lets you know that it's pretty versatile, and you can grow when you really don't have much space. We have a two-bedroom manufactured home. So this is a picture of the first garage that we turned into a growing space. It was about 8 by 20, is that correct?
8 by 24, and so things were really tight there. One advantage that we had going for us was that the garage was well insulated, so it was easy to put a little bit of heat in there in the winter and stayed pretty cool in the summer. The room right behind the garage had a nice window to the outside so we could get some ventilation. So it wasn't ideal, but it worked.
You can see to the right of this picture that there's just a simple little sink, which was a kind of our water support source for the area. And then we have growing shelves with lights and a work table. That was basically the essence of our growing operation.
I might add that the discharge from the sink ran across the floor to the floor drain. So things were a little makeshift, but we were able to make it work. We were able to get started, get going with a lot of capital, without a lot of capital expense.
Yeah, there was a question.
Are you saying that space that you needed was 8x24, or that you used was 8x24, or the garage was 8x24?
The space we used was 8x24. It was a single car, part of a single car garage. Because we also had like a workbench that took up part of that room that wasn't part of the microgreen operation.
This is the garage at our new place. It's basically a pole building. Which if some of you may know what that is, some of you may not. Basically, it's uprights that go down into the ground. There's no foundation for it. It did have a concrete slab in it, but it was uninsulated. So
water and electricity.
It did have water and it did have electricity, which was very handy. So what we did was this is the floor plan of what we converted it to. So we have a microgreen area here. This is the roll-up garage door. We added a service door here. We added a window here. Five windows along the south side. We have an office for my other business. Lucia has an office here, some storage space. But basically, this is the layout of our shelving units. And we do have the same sink set up in here. It's a little less makeshift, but we store our rice hulls and other materials there. And so this is basically the setup that we have now. And
okay, this is a picture of the inside of our new location. On the right of the right picture, you can see just a little bit of the refrigerator. We use that for keeping our harvested greens in. We often harvest within 24 hours of delivery, so sometimes we overnight some of the cut greens in the refrigerator. And then we have two rows of growing shelves, and we have supplies and materials there to the left. You can see the sink. We have a shower curtain hung that protects the wall. Our floor is completely waterproof and has a drain in it, so that takes care of that.
This is a row of four shelving units.
Yeah.
So you're here right now. Do you have someone look after it, or how have you timed it? Because sometimes we can't get away from our businesses.
We have a couple that works for us part-time, and it's been extremely valuable to us, especially this last year. We have had a number of trips where we've had to be gone, and we have not had to interrupt our deliveries because we've been able to have this couple trained in that does a really great job. So they covered when we went to our son's wedding. They covered when we went to Restoration International for like 5 days. It covers us when we come here. So,
actually, now that Lucia's working, they're doing most of the work, to be quite honest with you, and we're going to get to some financial information a little later, and we'll show more about that little farther on.
As we just go around, you can see here the sink that helps to orient you. I'm giving you kind of the 360 on the room. So we have the sink and a work table, and then we have a couple of shelving units we use for storage and for supplies and just things that help us to keep our operation as efficient as possible. So that's kind of an overview of our current growing space.
Okay, so just a couple of inspirational quotes here. The first one, out of Child Guidance, and in these days of mammoth trust and business competition, there are few who enjoy so real an independence and so great certainty of fair return for their labor as does the tiller of the soil. And then on the next page, we read, this is page 357, paragraph 1, if people only knew the value of the products of the ground, which the earth brings forth in their season, more diligent efforts would be made to cultivate the soil. All should be acquainted with the special value of fruits and vegetables fresh from the orchard and garden.
And microgreens are a good example of things fresh from the garden, vegetables fresh from the garden. Let's start by talking about what is a microgreen. Microgreens are technically, by definition, vegetable and herb seedlings that are grown in soil to the cotyledon or the first true leaf stage when they are harvested by cutting the stems just above the soil. There's some variation in what some of our customers want in terms of maturity, but that's basically the definition. Microgreens are not sprouts. And if you decide you want to do microgreens, it's very important to make that difference with your customers. Sprouts have very heavy regulation. You have to get all kinds of certifications and lab tests and all kinds of stuff if you sell sprouts. Microgreens are treated like field crops in terms of health regulations. So it's important that you have your customers understand that these are not sprouts that you're selling them. They are microgreens. It's really different in terms of the retail and regulations that are necessary. Let's start by talking about what are the benefits of growing your own microgreens. And one of the first ones is nutrition for your family. There's not a lot of studies out there in terms of nutritional analysis of microgreens, probably because they're a newer crop. But we do have a really good study that came out of the University of Maryland, and they looked at phytochemical levels in microgreens and found that the concentrations are actually quite a bit higher in this stage of the plant than they are in the more mature leaves. And we know that much of the nutrition from the seed is transformed into the seedling by the time you eat a microgreen. So they're very, very rich nutritionally. They're obviously very high in chlorophyll. They're high in minerals, just like all green leafies are. And so they provide you with lots of health benefits. We even call one of our mixes Green Immune Boost, and people love it because that's exactly what it does. It boosts your immune system. High mineral levels are also really important. We live in a day and age when many people are not getting the level of minerals that they need for good health. It's really essential for so many functions of your body. So there are many ways you can use microgreens to enjoy those benefits. They can be incorporated into juicing. A lot of people like to juice their microgreens. Personally, I think that's a waste of the fiber myself, but I would prefer to use them in green smoothies. Then you get the whole thing and you're not wasting any of it. But sometimes juicing is appropriate. They're good in salads and sandwiches, wraps, spring rolls, and garnishes.
If you have homeschoolers, microgreens are a great learning experience for young people. It integrates well with many different academic areas, including math, science, biology, health, practical and vocational skills, and character development. And as we'll see a little later, could be beneficial in teaching computer skills. The easiest crops to start with. We've got a list here. Brassicas, mustard, sunflowers. I don't understand the popularity of sunflowers myself personally. I like some of the other more delicate microgreens. But sunflowers seem to be quite popular. Radishes, popcorn shoots, peas. And another moderately easy crop are the basils. Crops that are a little more challenging in terms of how you have to set everything up. Beets, cilantro, fennel, herbs, and chards. These take a little longer, maybe 3 weeks or more, instead of the typical 2 weeks for the other ones that we listed.
There are two main growing systems for microgreens, depending on the kind of microgreen.
Can you hear in the back? No, I'm going to have to do the talking. You can let me talk. You can add to it if you need to. All right. So, sorry about that. Lucia's kind of the main microgreen lady, the main lady in the family doing microgreens. So, it's unfortunate that she's having challenges here. Okay. We use two different kinds of trays. We use a plug tray, which is a 72 cell tray. It's a 10 inch by 20 inch tray. The ones we have are very durable. We reuse them a lot. First, we plant them in our soil media. We soak the seeds and then overlay it with plastic until they germinate. And then once they're up maybe an inch or so, we pull them out from under the plastic and put them under lights. We also have crops that we put into the flat trays. Those are typically our sunflowers and peas and the larger seeds. We soak the seeds. We put them on the soil in trays. We stack the trays and put a little weight on them. And then once they're starting to push up good, we unstack those and put those under lights as well. The plug trays are nice for watering. We have a bin that we just dip the trays into. There's holes in the bottoms of the cells, and that's how we water those plug trays. And the flat trays we top water.
Some of the flat tray crops are put under lights and some are not. Like the popcorn shoots stay in the dark.
Yeah, there's one crop that we keep in the dark, and that's the popcorn shoots. Somehow they like those to be a pale color instead of green. Question? We grow ours indoors because we can provide a consistent environment. Where we are in northern Michigan, when we moved up there, they told us that summer was 3 days of poor sledding. So, and then someone else told us, yeah, last year summer was on a Tuesday. So that's, we just keep them inside. We can keep a steady environment. And as I mentioned, in this new garage, we added 5 large windows on the south side. That seems to really help the sunflowers produce really well, especially in the summer. So natural light is fine and good. We did start our first year with a greenhouse, and we abandoned that idea. So we'll talk about that a little later. Okay, so this section is about growing microgreens to sell, this section that we're going to cover here.
You can do this even if you need a very flexible schedule. If you don't have a lot of money to invest, maybe you don't have a lot of space to grow, maybe you hate weeding and you don't have a greenhouse. You can do it if you have small children, if you're doing elder care, and you're not available for full-time work, which means it can work around a lot of different people's schedules. We want to look, though, if you want to grow them for profit, it's very important to look at market considerations. You have to have a place to sell them. We'll tell you a little bit about the market that we are growing in. We have a large population center that's about 35 miles from our farm, and there's enough interest for us to have a market for our product. There's probably 75,000 people that live in that county, and about 40,000 of those are in the kind of more urban area. It's not really city up there, but it's a little bit more population dense. We have a good proportion of upper and middle class people. There's a local community college, and there's a lot of interest in environmentally friendly, organic, and local produce. We have quite a few farmers markets in the area. And there's not a lot of competition for quality microgreens. When we started doing microgreens, I only had one potential customer. But I did find that potential customer before I bought any equipment or started doing anything. And that potential customer was an organic store that had a nice produce section. And at that time, they did not have a microgreen supplier. They had had one for a period before, but didn't have one at the time that I talked to them. So they said that if the price was right and the quality was good, they were interested in carrying microgreens. So that was the only real customer I had in hand when I started. As I started canvassing businesses and restaurants in the area, I found that there was another microgreen supplier that I hadn't known about, but people complained a lot about the quality. The biggest complaint was that it was not consistent in size and quality. When people order microgreens, they want to see the same thing from week to week. It's only possible to do that if your growing conditions are fairly constant and you grow on a very strict schedule. because just 2 or 3 days difference in age makes a big difference in the size and the flavor of your microgreens. So that's the main reason why we went away from the greenhouse to the garage, because we found if you had a couple of really cool nights, it slowed the microgreens down enough so that at harvest day, because we have to have a specific day to deliver every week, then they might be too small 1 week if we had a few cool nights. Or if we had some really hot days with warm nights, they might overgrow by the time it was, you know, we wanted to harvest. And so we found that was a real problem. Yeah, our local health food store really does a real booming business in the area. So they turn over a lot of produce. Some other characteristics of our market were that it's a foodie town, so it's really known for its restaurants. It has several hundred restaurants. And so people come from all over the United States, sometimes for the food and wines in our area. It's a big wine-growing area. And often breweries are really good customers. And so I'm always happy to sell something actually healthy to a brewery. But they have the profit margins.
Because they have food as well in these places. So.
And they have good profit margins. They can afford microgreens more than a lot of other restaurants can. So these are some of the things you see about our market area.
Okay, so we are a very small business. This is a part-time enterprise for us. It's not our main source of income. We're considered a micro-enterprise with less than 6 employees. Our labor input is about 25 to 30 hours a week. And we have had a variable amount of hired labor over the years we've been doing this, and we'll cover that more in a graph that we have later on here. Our growing space was 192 square feet in the last place. Now we have 469 square feet, so it's a little more, it's a little less constricted. We can walk past each other when we're working in the area and so forth. So we harvest about 12 to 18 pounds a week, and our net revenue is about 50% of our gross. That is before taxes and so forth.
The yield varies quite a bit because we have a lot of seasonal variation. Traverse City is a real big tourist town, and so the population doubles or triples in the summertime.
Okay, so we're going to give you a little idea of what the income is for our size of an operation. You know, obviously, if we were doing this full-time for our main source of income, we could put more time into it. We'd probably make some different improvements, do some more marketing, and so forth. So, you know, I wouldn't say there are some really large microgreen businesses out there. We're just serving our local market, and that seems to be the easiest way for us to do what we need to do. So I'll just explain this graph here. We have the top line is our gross income or our revenue. That's our sales figure. The green line. The green line is our net. Okay. The blue line at the bottom is what we pay out in hired labor. And then the black line in the middle is the sum of the bottom two, which gives you an idea of what it would be if what we would be receiving if we did it all ourselves and weren't hiring any labor that way. And you can see in the last year between 2015 and 2016, these two were inverted. Most of our net revenue is going to labor, and we're collecting very little for ourselves at this point in time. Will we continue doing this if Lucia stays working full time? We're going to have to evaluate that over time. There are some tax benefits to it in terms of some things that we can cover with the business. But right now, we're gaining very little of it for ourselves. And I think this is instructive for someone planning to do this and to try to sell microgreens, because this tells you that the way you're going to make money at it is by really doing it yourselves and not hiring out the labor. Okay, well, this, I don't know, can you see these numbers in the back? Okay, this is this line is 10,000, 20,000, 30,000, and 40,000 at the top. So that'll help you figure out the graph. And then our first year was 2013, 2014, 15, and then 16.
So you're saying if you would have hired, you would have made about $19, $20.
Yeah, exactly. Last year was like 22, and this year would have been, or 2016, about 19. And I might mention that's before, that excludes our electricity costs, because we're not able to meter those separately yet. We're working on that. We should be able to meter our electricity separately very soon. That's probably $100 a month. I don't know. We're going to all LED bulbs, which is going to save us a lot of money in electrical costs. And the microgreens seem to be doing even better with the LED bulbs than with the fluorescents that we've had. So, and why don't you back it up just a second. So it also excludes infrastructure costs. This excludes infrastructure costs. And the reason why I've done it that way is because that would really skew the numbers. And what we're looking at is our long-term revenue. That's what to me is interesting, is to think about it on a long-term basis. So right now we're paying them $9.50 an hour, and we are covering them with workers' comp insurance as well. Which is a little bit of a challenge. That's expensive. But I really, actually, the way I work it is I have another business, and the employees are really employees of my other business, and the farm reimburses my other business for those costs. So
this is our availability list. This is what produce managers want to see when you go to sell your product. It has the types of microgreens that we have available. We have mixes. We have some straight varieties, for example. We have a green immune boost mix, which is mostly brassicas. That's like things like broccoli, kale, kohlrabi, arugula are in that mix. We have an organic rainbow mix as kind of an artisan mix. We do that mix by hand after the greens are grown. They're not grown together. They're mixed together at harvest. And it's a beautiful, I think we have some pictures later on that might show that. And then we have organic Asian greens, which are a mixture of pak choi, tatsoi, and mizuna. And then we have different pack sizes. We sell in 1 ounce clams with a hang tab. We also sell in a 24 ounce clam shell, which is about 3 cups of microgreens. And we sell bulk to some of our restaurants. The bulk is a gallon Ziploc bag that holds a half a pound. So those are the 3 sizes that we use for sales. the clamshells go to all the grocery stores, and they go to some restaurants if they're ordering smaller amounts.
And that middle size, we pack 1.9 ounces of microgreens into.
Yeah, the 3-cup clamshell is only 1.9 ounces. The herb clamshell is a 1 ounce. We also have radishes, mustard, pea shoots, sunflower greens, basils, and we have grown cilantro. It's a big pain, so we don't, like, put it on our availability sheet right now because the labor involved in cleaning it is just not worth it. If I find a better way to do it, I might go back. But, I mean, the herb cilantro. Yeah.
You have to pull the seed hull off.
They don't drop.
These growth years.
Yeah, they don't drop their hulls till they're, I don't know, 4 or 5 weeks along, which is a little bit too big. So at the time when you need to harvest them, you kind of have to pick almost all the hulls off, and that's just a big.
We had a question over here.
Yes.
So where do you get your clamshells and labeling them?
Okay. We get our clamshells, our supplies from some different wholesalers, and I have a sheet, a resource sheet, that's uploaded to the Ad Ag website. You should be able to download it. I gave it to them this morning, so it should show up anytime today. And that has the details on our suppliers. Labels we print ourselves. We have a color laser printer, and so we print our own labels. We get clamshells, the larger ones from Worldwide Plastics. We get the smaller ones from Monty Plastics
in Michigan.
A clamshell is those plastic containers that snap together, snap closed, like you get at the grocery store. Yeah, that's what a clamshell is. You don't need any kind of special seed for microgreens. Like some places have like a section in the seed catalog that say microgreens. You don't have to buy them there. It's just what species you want to grow, what crop you want to grow. We are a certified organic operation, so we have to buy organic seed. Organic seed is about twice the cost of standard seed. On our resource sheet, you will see our main seed suppliers. We get seeds from Mums in Canada. They're an excellent price. They don't charge shipping if you buy more than $50 worth at a time, which is really easy to do. We get some seeds out of California, Corona seeds. We get a few that we can't get anywhere else at High Mowing. High Mowing has good seeds, but they're more expensive. And Johnny's seeds for some varieties that we can't find other places, because Johnny's is also on the higher end. There is a supplier on your sheet called Todd's Seeds. They're out of Michigan, and they tell me that they buy organic seed, but they're not certified as a repackager, so they can't label their seed organic, which makes it quite a bit cheaper. I can't use it for my operation unless I can't find that variety organically, but that would maybe be a good source for some of you that don't need to be certified, but you want some non-GMO seed. Oh, how much do we sell the sizes for? That's on the availability sheet as well. You will see that, let me go back to our main crops over here. Like the Green Immune Boost, which is the Brassica mix, and that's probably one of the simplest ones to grow. 1 ounce clamshell is $3.75. This is pricing for restaurants, so this is our retail pricing. Grocery stores get a wholesale price, which is usually 20 to 30% less because they need to mark it up. We sell the 1.9 ounce clamshell for $7.10. The 8 ounce bulk bag is about $20. The rainbow mix is our premium mix. That one goes for $28 a half pound. That's a half pound, but if they buy more than three bags, then we give them a cut.
What are clamshell holes? And do other of your clamshell holes? What are
holes? Holes is the outer hard part of your seed. Different seedlings have different styles of growing. The brassicas, which are the things like in the cabbage family, it's a little round seed, and it falls off very early in the germination process. And if it doesn't fall off, it's a very soft seed. You don't notice it, like if you chew on it. Okay, so it's not an issue. Cilantro has a very hard, round seed, like a BB. And it splits when it germinates, but the split seed hangs onto one of the leaves as the leaves come up. And so as you look at a tray, it's got all these little brown hulls hanging onto the tips of the new little leaves. And those hulls are actually what is ground for coriander. So you know it has a very different flavor from cilantro green. And those are not as pleasant to chew on. Most people don't appreciate that in a salad or a wrap. So we have to take those off. Here's a picture of the rainbow mix. This is the one we mix by hand. It's one of my favorites. It's just gorgeous and it's very tasty. And this is one that a lot of chefs like. When we talk about restaurants that we sell to, you're looking at high-end restaurants. You don't go to places that have cheap lunches. Okay, they're not going to buy your microgreens. Some of our biggest buyers have been like an exclusive restaurant that imports steak from Japan, $200 for a couple. Okay, and they bought thousands of dollars of microgreens over one summer. And so, you know, they have that kind of budget. So you have to kind of pick your restaurants.
But one thing we want to say about restaurants is you establish a relationship with the chef. But there seems to be a lot of turnover with chefs at restaurants. So your customer base can change quickly if you're working with restaurants.
Yeah, it is a little less predictable over the long term. They change menus every few months. Every time they change a menu, they may decide they don't want microgreens on the next menu when they were buying, you know, 2-3 pounds a week from you before. A chef leaves and a new chef comes in who doesn't know anything about microgreens and doesn't care. And then you lost that customer. But if you have kind of a number of restaurants, you're not going to have as much trouble because they'll usually, you know, you can just keep kind of shuffling. Our approach to marketing. What we did when we got started was we found the local health food store. Then we did a lot of cold calling. I just got on the phone and I just called restaurants. I tried to find either the executive chef or the restaurant manager, whoever has the buying decision power in the business. And it's not the same for everyone. And then we would try to make an appointment where we could drop off a sample. And I'd take a little sampler that might have 2 or 3 different kinds of microgreens, try to find a time when the chef is there, and go in and take your sample. They usually want to taste it right on the spot. And then they might put it in the refrigerator because they'll want to know how long it lasts. And how long it lasts is very, very important. And your growing techniques have a lot of impact on how long your microgreens stay fresh. Our peas are good for 3 to 4 weeks. Some of the other microgreens in the market are not good more than about a week and a half. So, you know, it depends. And some microgreens are more fragile than others. Basil is very fragile. It has to be kept at a specific temperature. And we found that some grocery stores, their fridges simply were not the appropriate temperature for basil, and they could not keep them even a week. And so we couldn't sell them there because it just looked awful on the shelf. Whereas we sell to restaurants that have our basil for sometimes 2 weeks, and it still looks good. But the restaurants are careful. They put our basil in a styrofoam case inside their big walk-in refrigerator, so it's not quite as cold as some of the other shelving. So, we deliver samples and we deliver, a schedule for ordering so that they know we need growing time because we only grow to order. It's really hard to have wastage with microgreens. You really don't want that. I mean, we eat our surplus, but there's only so much you can eat. You don't want a whole lot of that. So they have to order like 2 or 3 weeks ahead of when they want it, and they have to give us 2 to 3 weeks notice when they want to change their order, so that we're not left with huge amounts because somebody changed their mind about what they want. And because we grow to order, we have we calculate based on our standing orders what our amount is to plant every week. We haven't explored farmers markets in our area. There are some people that sell microgreens at our farmers markets, but a lot of ours are on Sabbath. Or we find they took a lot of time out of the house, and the whole reason I was doing this is because I couldn't leave the house. So that didn't work for us. And that was another question?
Well, it was about the farmer's market. If you grow to order and then you go to the farmer's market and you don't sell them, then you're stuck with...
Yes, the question was going to farmer's markets, for instance, with your surplus, you could end up with still having surplus if you don't sell it. That is an issue if you're not growing to order.
And that was my question. Thank you, Michelle, for setting it up. When you have surplus, you can't eat it right away, you can't give it away, what can you do with it so it doesn't go to waste? Can I juice it up and keep it in the fridge? Can I freeze it?
I can put a lot of sunflowers in a single smoothie. So smoothies is really a great way to use surplus because you can use a lot that way. But what we often do is take it to church and potluck, and our church members love it. And then we share. We have once a month, we have our community come in for a church potluck, and we often have surplus microgreens. We just share it with them, and they love that.
Once in a while, we'll call a customer and see if they'll take some extra in special circumstances.
Okay, so how long does the microgreen last in your refrigerator?
Usually a good 10 to 14 days.
And more sometimes.
Sunflowers. Sunflowers, I'm not sure about that. I think that might squeeze them too much. They need air. In fact, when we pack them, we always pack them with a paper towel to absorb extra moisture, because the real key to keeping microgreens long is keeping them dry. If they get moisture, they'll start rotting right away. Part of it is how you grow them. Like, I don't think hydroponically grown microgreens last as long as soil-grown microgreens. And I know that different growers don't seem to have as much fridge time as ours do. We get a lot of comments from our chefs that they really like our greens because they last long. I had a chef call me 2 weeks ago, and he's just like, you know, we're not using our microgreens as fast as we thought. They're piling up in the fridge. I've got like 3 weeks worth, but obviously they were still good. So, you know, that's something to keep in mind. Here's a picture of the greenhouse that we started with.
We'll let Lucia rest her voice here. We started with a greenhouse, one that I built. Very, very simple, but very effective. We had shelves on the left side there and a bench on the right. I think it was 8x20. But we found that our summer is short, and we have some large temperature variations in the summer. We could have real cool nights and then days that are really warm. So we had problems with consistency in the time it took to mature the microgreens. We had inconsistency in the size and those types of things. So we actually, after the first winter, we didn't go back to the greenhouse with our operation.
One of the other issues was you can't control the humidity in a greenhouse very well. And at harvest, you need your microgreens dry to cut them. And I had a very difficult time getting my microgreens dry enough for them to really last like they should and get them cool. So I would like set up fans even in the greenhouse and fan everything all day long as I'm trying to cut. And sometimes the humidity level is just too high. And so then you start getting the microgreens, the stems sticking together in the bags, and that's too damp.
Yeah, the microgreens are grown quite densely in the tray, so you got to watch the humidity very carefully. We maintain that. We're gonna hold the questions till the end so we get through the material here. We maintain the temperature about 70 degrees plus or minus a few degrees. We run fans and open windows when possible. We try to just keep the humidity kind of stable, not too high. And recently we've added a dehumidifier and a window air conditioner we don't get a lot of real hot days in the summer where we are, but for a few days it's helpful to be able to turn that air conditioner on and run it. So what are your infrastructure, your basic infrastructure requirements? And this comes out of our experience. You need a well-insulated space. You need temperature control. You need humidity control. You need ventilation. You might have a time where your temperature is good, your humidity is good, but if you have your windows all closed up and you walk into that space, the air just doesn't smell fresh. And I think the plants do better. Even in the winter, we'll leave a window open, a couple windows open a little bit, even in the coldest weather, just to keep some fresh air going in there. We already talked about lights. We have 5 shelf units. They're 48 inches wide and 18 inches deep, which is a little narrow for the 20-inch trays. But we cut cardboards 20 by 44 and put them on those shelves. And then we can get 4 trays on a shelf. And we hang the lights from the shelf above. So in that 5 shelf unit, we've got 4 shelves that have lights. And we put 2 double bulb fixtures for each shelf. You need a source of water. You need a decent electrical system. In our operation, we've got a lot of bulbs. If you add it all up, it's a lot. And then, of course, you need some management, accounting, of course, planting schedule, harvest schedule, ability to prepare invoices, and so forth.
I want to talk just a couple minutes about Microgreen Academy. We've worked with people that wanted to learn how to grow their own microgreens. And we found that there's really not a lot of resources out on the market that take you through the process step by step, from planning to implementation to marketing to harvest, all of that. And we had to learn a lot of what we've learned through trial and error. That's the reason we've decided to start Microgreen Academy, which is a way for us to share with others what we have learned. Microgreen Academy can help you if you want to grow microgreens for yourself. Because you can get instruction on how to do it step by step, learn how to apply each step to the growing cycle, from planting to harvest. You can get resources to help you integrate it into your homeschooling program, and also gain resources, access to resources as we continue to develop them and make them available, as well as getting lots of ideas and recipes for new ways to use what you grow. If you want to start growing commercially, Microgreen Academy is developed to save time and money by giving you step-by-step guidance that covers these different areas, like market research, the setup process, needed equipment, tools and supplies, resources on suppliers and vendors, variety-specific guidance. We found that there's quite a bit of variation in the requirements of different kinds of microgreens, and it really helps if you know what are the special things, the little idiosyncrasies of the different varieties. We've been through the certification process. We're willing to help mentor people through that process if that's something that you need in your particular market, as well as helping with troubleshooting just based on the experience that we've had. Growing to order takes some extra special resources that you don't need if you're just growing for yourself. For example, order quantities can vary from week to week. Different crops have a different length of time for growing. For us to do our rainbow mix every week, we have to consider when to plant the different components of the mix because they don't all grow at the same rate. So to make sure you have the right amount of microgreen at harvest every week for what your orders are gets pretty complex. When we first started, I spent hours and hours every week just trying to calculate how much to plant every week to have it ready for when our orders were. So all of those considerations. I have my own personal spreadsheet guru right here. As an engineer, he's an expert at using spreadsheets, and he developed what we call our microgreen automation spreadsheet that allows us to input our orders, and it figures everything else out for us, and I just love that. And we also work our schedule to try to minimize what we have to do on Sabbath. Usually it's just a little watering in the evening.
Okay, this is the automation spreadsheet, and I've set this spreadsheet up with several worksheets. We have one worksheet for every customer, okay? And so we have all the dates of the year in that worksheet, and so we can insert into there what their orders are on a week by week basis, okay? And then there is a worksheet that does a summary of all of those, puts it all together for all our customers, and then that, from there, we have another worksheet which gives you the what each customer's order is in a tabular format, in a table format. And then the last worksheet on that is a planting schedule, which takes into consideration the yield for each crop, how many grams you can get per tray. It takes into consideration the length of time it takes to grow all the components of your various products that you sell, and it tells you when to plant and how much to plant. So this is something, as Lucia mentioned, she was spending 4 or 5 hours a week figuring out when to plant and how much to plant. And this just takes it down to a few minutes every week, just maintaining this. And once in a while, she'll shoot it over to me by email, and she'll say, "Jim, I have a problem here," or we need to set this up for the new year or whatever. And I'll spend, I don't know, a half hour or something working on it. But Anyway, this has just been very helpful if you're going to do this commercially, to have something like this.
Good record keeping is really important whether or not you're certified. But we've developed a lot of records that help us to do this easily. We keep track of all of these different things that you see on here. And if people are wondering how much it costs, we go through certifications or CCOF. They usually do inspections on a yearly basis. Depending on how many farms the inspector sees on his trip, they divvy up the inspector's charge so that we don't get charged for the full amount. There are government grants that help you, depending on the state that you're in. That for us, it covers about 75% of our inspection cost, so up to $1,000. And so that's we've generally been able to get the full amount. So anyway, if anybody's interested in some of the resources we have to offer, we do have a booth. Just come by and sign up, and you can sign up for our mailing list for free, and you'll know as soon as we have more and newer resources available. This is our website and our email. So these are ways you can contact us, probably the best ways. And we will take questions for the next, 3 minutes, I think I still have. Yes, you had one earlier.
You mentioned that you're using grow lights or whatever. Is it grow lights or LED lights?
We just use standard LED lights. They're not specific full-spectrum grow lights. They're the cheaper ones.
If you had your thing on wheels, you had, a big door, you just roll them out on a sunny patio area?
Yes. Can you – okay, the question is, if you have a big sunny area, can you put your growing tray – growing shelves on wheels and wheel them out during sunny. Yes, that's an excellent idea, especially if you're in a breezy place and you get lots of good air circulation. That can be excellent. I know some really big microgreen growers that do that, even up in Canada. So I think that's a great idea. Yes, question?
How many hours of light, natural or...
Okay.
And then how far above the plant? Because I know if you do too far...
Okay, the question is how many hours of light and how far are the lights from the plants? We do about 11 to 12 hours of light every day, and the lights are average of 6 inches above, 4 inches above the plant, maybe 6 inches above the tray. Question?
Can you just repeat your website for people that are listening later?
Oh, yes, thank you. The website is www.paradiseacres.farm. That's paradiseacres.farm. Our email is PA for Paradise Acres, pafarm77@gmail.com. Thank you.
Have you used growing pads?
No, I've not used growing pads. We prefer to grow in soil. I think it's better for the plant myself, and I think the plants are more nutritious when you do that. Question?
What kind of soil?
Oh, yeah, there was a question about what kind of soil. We didn't talk about that. Our soil only has three components. It has coconut core. A fine coconut core, has rice hulls, and then it has a veganic powdered fertilizer, 711.
This media was brought to you by Audioverse, a website dedicated to spreading God's word through free sermon audio and much more. If you would like to know more about Audioverse, or if you would like to listen to more sermons, please visit www.audioverse.org.